money for cow-calf producers selling to feedlots. Comments from any of you on PI testing? Certainly a very popular buzzword in the industry over the last year to year and a half. In programs and cattle you're going?
Go ahead.
I know in my arena, right now I do have a few of my feed yards asking for them. And it's extremely beneficial on the health side of it. Once again, I have a hard time when somebody brings me a set of PI-tested yearling, PI-tested calf. They'll buy them. They like them. The premium issue, once again, kind of goes, it's a juggling act. If they need the cattle and they're in the right position, they'll pay for them. But more often than not, I can get an additional amount of money from my producer to people that aren't as concerned about it. I think that in the future it's going to become an issue. I really do. And the reason why I think that is because in the climate that we are in today and the amount of equity that's disappearing as far as private equity within the feed yard industry, more and more of them will ask for it. And hopefully at some point, I have one guy that will pay for it. He just reimburses the producer for his expense of it. And I think we'll see more and more of that. I would like to see more and more of that because we are seeing some results in a feed yard. I do have two feed yards right now that I trade substantial cattle to that are completely PI-free, and they PI them when they come in. Now, the problem I have with that is when we PI test them, what do we do with the ones that test positive? The ones that test positive go to the feed yard. I mean, go to the sale barn. So I might have not bought them from you, but guess what? I just bought them from your neighbor. That's something that I don't know the answer to. I think cows need to be PI tested. We identified a cow in South Texas on one of the big ranches. I'm not going to say. Y'all would recognize the name. And we were able to track her down and get her out of the herd and send her to slaughter. Those cattle that are PI tested, I think, need to go to slaughter. Because, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think from a slaughter standpoint there's any issue with it. So if you do have one and you do PI test, please don't take them to the sale barn. Or if you take them to the sale barn, let them know so that they'll go to slaughter, because it doesn't do anybody any good to recycle.
From a producer's point of view, we PI test all registered and commercial cattle. We had a couple incidents in our program. We were able to clean it up right away. It's important that you do it before the breeding season so that you do not pass it on. It adds value on our operation. We have very little sickness up till probably the feedlot phase. The thing that's a little disappointing is I wish there was a bit of standardization within the industry, because we enter our calves into the feedlot that are PI tested and they may be commingled with cattle that aren't. And so it really didn't do us any good once it reached that stage. But I think there'll be enough pressure on it someday that it will be a bigger issue.
Bob, I've heard some seed stock people say, if you're in the seed stock business, unless you really want to play with a lot of risk, you better be PI testing. And that seems to make sense. I assume you'd agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a mandatory. In our sale catalog, we print it. We guarantee it. And it's right there and right.
In the Alliance program, how are you guys handling that?
I don't think there's any debate. I'm going to be a little bit more general than answer your direct question, because I get one. Because they didn't.
Okay. You straightened them out on the other ones, so now
yeah.
You can kind of, okay.
I don't think there's any debate whatsoever over the science of the cost of persistently infected BVD. I mean, I don't think that's not what we're debating here. I think what the debate is without a traceability system, and again, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a traceability system, but without a mechanism of managing and measuring and following those cattle. I mean, from what I understand, you asked the question about whether they're safe to harvest. It's not a very high percentage of those calves that make it that far. So they get isolated and they just are fed, and hopefully they get big enough to go if they do. If they don't, they die. I mean, and it's costly no matter what you do. I think there are testing strategies where you can mix 10 ear notches in one bag and know the animal numbers for those 10 and really reduce your cost. The very first question you asked was whether it was something that producers should do. I think every producer should do it. I think regardless of whether it has any downstream value, I think it has value on your own operation.
from a standpoint of some of the problems they have in cowherds, whether it's reproductive rates, respiratory problems, so some of those type of things, it makes an awful lot of sense for them to be doing it at their level. Let's go into another area that I know once we got into this business, we'd do meetings and talk about a wide variety of topics, and this one always seemed to be one that dominated about 50% of the questions that would come up. And we heard a lot about it this morning at some of the sessions where we had some of the restaurant people, food service distributors, and that's the whole natural arena. So let's touch on that. Is this a fad, or is this here to stay in the cattle industry? That's the first part of the question. Second part of the question, what do you have to do to be a part of the natural program? Bob, you're probably closest to this. I'll pick on you to start with. You participate in it. You've been in it for quite a while. I think it's something that's worked for your family and a lot of fellow producers that you partner with. Your thoughts in terms of where all this is heading, and what does it mean to be natural?
I'll give you a little bit more history here. In the Country Natural Beef Group, one of the requirements is that you go and do an in-store in a supermarket. And none of those in-stores that you do are usually in your hometown. They're in big cities like Seattle, Portland, Oregon, San Francisco. And when you go there, it's that you're not educating necessarily the consumer. They're basically educating you, because the consumer in your hometown is a whole lot different than the consumer in Seattle, Washington. And I'll give you a little story. There was a guy that came up one time, and he's got about 1 million earrings, and his ears are hanging kind of low. And I mean, he's pretty buffed out, and I thought, I'm dead. This guy's going to kill me. And he just comes up, and he says, "We love your beef." And, you know, I thought I was dead. And here he loves our beef because they, whether it's right or wrong, they believe that hormones are bad for them. They believe that antibiotics are bad for them. And you're, instead of arguing with that guy, you know, he's right. He's the consumer. Give him what he wants. So that's the particular niche market that we're going after, is that particular consumer. I think it's here to stay. I don't think it'll go away. One thing about natural programs is they're expensive when you retain ownership to feed those cattle through those programs. You might as well figure another dime, at least, on average gain, to feed those cattle. But the premiums need to offset the extra cost. And that's why in that particular program, we have a cost of production model that takes 10 producers. We take their costs and we figure back what we need on an 8-weight to be profitable with a reasonable rate of return. And then the specific cuts that we have 40 to 50 cuts, and those cuts are then a price so that it brings back that profit to our individuals so that they can cover their costs. Now, this is a little different way of pricing your commodity. But if I am just going to go into a branded beef program that is natural and retain ownership, I'm going to have to see how that product is priced, and then I'm guaranteed that I don't enter into that program, that price slides downhill, and I'm sitting here with all these costs, and I have nowhere to go with my product.
Last comment on the further. I know you've had positive and negative experiences as well.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in it. Whole Foods Market is probably as good as anybody in going a little step further, the organic beef deal. And I've been shopping at Whole Foods since it was just one store in Austin, Texas when it got started. So I'm a firm believer. The only difference that I will say about the natural beef program as far as retained ownership is don't. I've fed several thousand of them. And if you're in a cost-plus program, like Bob's talking about, it's one thing. If you're in just going to sell your cattle into a natural beef program, sell them as yearlings, sell them as weaned calves, and let everybody else take the risk, because I can tell you the cost associated with it don't come back in the carcass. Because I've fed several thousand of them, and I am a poster boy for telling you that I would have been better off every time selling them as yearlings or selling them as weaned calves and not feed them. The retained ownership model, unless you're in a situation like that they have, is very hard to recoup your cost. And you're going to get it, you know, depending on the time of year and its market timing, you're going to get a $4 to $8 to $10 premium for that take it, stick it in your pocket, and get ready for next year. And I don't, I'm not saying it's here to stay. It's a great program. Please produce beef for it, because let me tell you, my wife, that's all I eat at my house is natural beef anymore. And she does the shopping, but she is a firm believer, and I'm in the cattle business, and I argue with God. Well, I've argued with her until I can't anymore. And she thinks, just like you talked about, the antibiotics, these larger markets that we get into, that's where these people are headed. And the organic labeling, all of those things, you see it everywhere, and it's here to stay.
Mike, not, you're not gonna, I'm not going to let you out of this one, so
okay.
Participate.
The president of AMI was in our executive committee meeting this morning, and they were talking about long-term trends and what they see. And AMI is the American Meat Institute. And the current president is a vendor of either cooked and processed products in the Chicago area for either the restaurant trade or the manufactured food trade, which would be like frozen dinners and those kind of things. And he was adamantly trying to get instill into our minds that this natural market is growing, that it's going to continue to grow, that it is something that we all need to pay attention to. From my NCBA side, what bothers me is about natural is that there are so many different standards. There is no standard USDA definition for natural that everybody meets. And so you can go, and my complaint with it is you go to the retail store and there will be four products that say they're natural. One of them is only the last 100 days. One of them is never, ever. I mean, they're just all over the board. So I think, first of all, I think standardization will come. I think there'll be standardization. The other thing in my part of the world is most of the cattle are marketed through auction markets in my part of the world. And if you can have a day where you know there's going to be a couple or three natural buyers there at the time, at that day, and you know there's going to be several truckloads of natural cattle, they'll bring a whale of a premium. If not, they won't. It's that simple.
I want to add a little bit about standardization. We sell to four different all-natural companies. And all four of them, if you go through what their sheets are, I have to keep all four of their brochures with me to see which one they fit. Each one of them has completely different protocols, and it would shock you if you lined them up how different they are. So once again, you almost have to find the most difficult protocol that you can find and match that up so that you can go to the three or four different ones. Some of them are all black. Some of them have to be baldies. Some of them go as far as allowing different products in their feeds. It's just, standardization is where we really need to push, and that would be a good thing for us to do here.
I think that's a great point. Is in this natural area, just our company got in it a few years back, And we really resisted it. We thought it would kind of distract from a regular marketing program. We finally decided from our perspective, if we're going to do it, we try to do it right. And so the first thing is what's right, because there's about a zillion different ways of doing it, lest you say. And what's right is every program has some flexibility to it. In the broadest terms of natural, in the eyes of most consumers, that probably means three things. One is that growth promotants are not used. That means the calves simply were not implanted as calves. They were not implanted through the yearling program, and that continued through the feedlot program. And obviously, that's a major part of the cost that these guys alluded to, or added cost, by not using the extra pounds that you generate. Step number two is antibiotic use. Antibiotic use does not mean at the stocker level or the feedlot level. That starts with you as a cow-calf producer, and that means that when you got calves as they're born, if you got some scoury calves and those type, you've got to, if you're treating those calves with an antibiotic, those calves are documented. That paperwork accompanies those calves. So when they talk about the fact that these calves have to have accompanying paperwork, it is that paperwork starting at birth and going on through right up to weaning time or whenever they leave your ranch, whether that's a short growing program. Documentation, specific numbers, or some system is very important. And the last part is the use of animal products. By and large, if you're going to be a never-ever type program, animal products as well as the two other criteria are not part of it. So I think as a cow-calf producer, if you're going to position yourself, I would encourage you to look at it from that standpoint, but I'll really echo the part before you get very far along. You better be having an idea of what program you're targeting, because you can get yourself into some added cost. They'll come back and bite you in terms of that kind of program in a hurry. Let's keep going in terms of one part on this deal. Bob, you alluded to cost plus. Cost plus means what? It sounds like exactly what we need to be in, but what? And then the part is a comment more. Be sure that you have a buyer that is properly capitalized or understands the process. What does cost plus really mean from the standpoint you've referred to it a couple times? I think it's what we'd like to do, but how does it fit your program?
How I refer to it is cost plus reasonable rate of return. And it's a reasonable investment on your assets, basically. And so we pay ourselves a profit. We allow ourselves a percentage of gain on our operations, and then those are put into a production model. One thing, Whole Foods is one of our biggest customers, and we try and sell other things other than a natural program. You know, Coleman is a supplier, Myers is a supplier to Whole Foods also. So other areas that we try and capitalize on are sustainability aspects. And we try and promote that our operations are to be sustainable, to be passed on to the next generations. We use Grazewell principles. We try and take care of the land. We use environmental principles. We have what is called an internal partner that we just developed that is looking into carbon credits to see if we can get money back on and trading for carbon credits on our range ground. So it's an aspect that we're trying to promote and sell. It gives a positive perception that we're doing something that's environmentally and friendly, where we have the consumer in mind, and then that's the approach that we have, that we sell ourselves or try and differentiate ourselves from other natural programs. I was thinking about this the other day that we did something, and it's like, how do you add value other than promoting it on environmental issues? You guys are probably familiar, hopefully you're familiar with NRCS and EQIP and Soil Water Conservation District. We did a project the other day with Fish and Game to develop springs and water troughs on our range, and they paid for it. How did that add value to my calves? We've been in horrific droughts in our area. It increased my conception rates. I used to have watering holes, limited watering holes, and basically when you turn those cows on those watering holes, we dried them up. We lost weaning weights. We had health issues in our calves. And these particular projects have added those values as far as conception rates and weaning weights on our calves. We've turned around. We're going to document what we've done as far as the environment goes, and we're going to promote that to our customer, who is Whole Foods. It ultimately gives it to the consumer, so it paints a positive picture on our industry and our particular brand of beef program.
Okay, we're going to change gears a little bit, and one of you asked a question. I think it's a great question, because it's what CowCamp people do in the industry. You are the genetic manufacturer of that calf as it goes through the whole production process and ultimately to the consumer. And a lot of these folks have put a lot of emphasis on using genetic selection tools at cattlemen's colleges and many other educational events, discussions on EPDs, and these type of things have been used. A lot of folks work very hard at knowing how their product is going to hang, or how their carcasses or cattle are going to hang on the rail, getting carcass data. How do producers get paid for using the right kind of genetics, going to the extra bother of knowing what kind of cattle they're producing from a carcass standpoint? What can they do as calves move through the marketplace? Mike, you've worked a lot in that area, done a lot. I'll start with you.
Oh, boy. There is a huge spectrum here, and we've worked very closely over time. Matter of fact, I have a young man that works for me that is involved in a time breeding program, and his graduate process was to take known and proven sires that have been proven in time breeding programs with proven and high accuracy traits for carcass value. And we put those in a significantly large group of cattle, brought those cattle in, fed them, followed them all the way through, went through the harvest process. And, you know, there is more, way more than the value or the cost of the time breeding program and the cost of the semen that was returned in that process. So the lesson in that is proven genetics. He even took it further and went into the process of, okay, what if we take those steers' sisters, their siblings, female siblings, and kept them into the herd for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more years, and what kind of ramification did that have on their net return and their value? And then if you add to that fact that the entire calving season on these herds is shortened and way down into 40, 50 days, where the cost structure on keeping those cows was dramatically lowered, and you had a very consistent process for measuring production between those cows. If you add all those things together, there is a significant return on using proven genetics in a program that has, where you were able to actually harvest the value at the end of the chain. Now, having said that, I've been in many of these groups that try to put enough critical mass of these genetically improved or proven sire sets. And first of all, you can't get them to agree on a sire. Secondly, you can't get them to agree on what traits that you're going to have importance in. Thirdly, most of them aren't, if they have a choice between using a proven sire with 60 or 70% accuracies on the key traits versus getting free semen to put on a production test, you just can't hardly get them to jump. So I think it's just kind of like PI testing. It's incredibly documentable. The science is easy to find. It's not hard to just...